Let's go ahead and get started. This session is called Case Studies Regarding Emotional Abuse. There's a reason why it's case study as opposed to here are five truths about emotional abuse. I think abuse is one of the most significant topics in the biblical counseling movement today. Some statistics suggest that a very small percentage of sexual assaults among high school and college students are reported. And there are some who at least fear that the same thing might be true in marriage. There have been recent books published on this subject, and I think each of them has helped at least to ask questions and further the conversation. It doesn't necessarily mean we're going to agree with everything we read in every one of the books, but at least it's furthering the conversation. I want to do a couple things in this session. I want to explain first where there's some common agreement, maybe some areas where agreement has not been achieved, and then a few goals for the session today. Now, you're going to have, I believe I saw on your schedule, it's either tomorrow or Friday, that Dale Johnson, who's the executive director of ACBC, will be here to discuss the abuse policy written by ACBC. You guys see that on the schedule? Okay, so that's another one of the conversation issues, like it's flowing out of, and I'm sure he'll explain how that was created and what's it say. And we're all going to have to, I haven't seen it myself, so I don't know what it says. So you're probably going to see it before I do. And there's going to be a lot of challenging comments, questions that flow out of that. I think there are a few things that we can say are common. We agree on several fronts. I think the biblical counseling movement is largely, although not perfectly, united regarding the safety of victims of physical violence. Now, again, do people have stories where that's not true? Yes. But I think as a whole, there is a commitment on the part of biblical counselors to hold people accountable when there are acts of physical violence. And that could be sexual. It could be other types of physical violence. But when that happens, I believe at least the people that I know in the biblical counseling movement are interested in that person being held accountable with the church and with the law. And we have, at least around here, I mean, I have a lot of relationships with law enforcement. And so we're more than happy to incorporate law enforcement into equations that they need to be incorporated into. However, I think that there are some real challenges, even in those cases, you know, because are people willing to talk about them? Are they willing to go through legal processes? There are some really hard questions that get asked as soon as we have physical violence. So we might agree that there needs to be accountability with the church and with the law, but even how we navigate those can sometimes be a bit tricky. I think, though, that there's also confusing ground. I don't think the biblical counseling movement is united on other points, especially when physical violence is not present. And I'm using physical violence under the categories of, you know, throwing punches, throwing something at someone for harm, forced sexual activity, constraint, anything that fits in an act of physical violence fits in the category of violence and physical abuse. When there's not violence, then people are not sure how they're going to quantify everything else. We struggle defining abuse. I mean, when have you seen a nice, clear, crisp definition? It's not always easy. I think we also struggle with strategy. If I get an intake form where somebody says that they are being emotionally abused, which is probably the language that they will use if there's not physical violence, And even if there is physical violence, they might use that language not to irritate their perpetrator. But, boy, it's still tough on how we navigate it from a strategy standpoint. If I see that on an intake form, is it my job to just simply assume that it must be true? That may sound like a trick question, but it's not a trick question. And you can understand both sides of the challenge. Do you take everything that a person puts on their intake form as thus says the Lord? Do you read the intake form and say they must be telling me the truth about all matters? Well, if you don't do it here, then does that mean you're just not going to believe the person who claims it? I think our own counseling experience, maybe even our own life experience, raises certain questions. I once had a student in our MABC program who was sexually abused as a child, and it profoundly affected how she thought about other people. Thankfully, Jesus redeemed her, rescued her from the violence that she was suffering. But she believed that every woman on the planet was sexually abused. She didn't even need actual evidence. It was a basic presupposition that that would be true for all women. Well, my life and my various relationships impact how I see the world too. I've never been under the authority of a man who behaved in oppressive patterns. Have I been sinned against? Of course. Have I lived under the constant bombardment of oppressive language? No. Have I experienced a tongue lashing or two? Yes. But many of those were short-lived experiences. My more permanent relationships were not that way. So some of my counselees just have different experiences. Now, when we're talking about the category of abuse, what's the value of it being labeled abuse? What's the value of that? Why is it important? Why do I have to call something abuse? Okay, I can acknowledge something's wrong without calling it abuse. It's not very clear there either. If my friends who are in law enforcement, I tell them, hey, look, I would like you to go check on such and such a house because this guy constantly berates his wife with profanity. Is that guy going to jail? Nope, because he didn't violate the law. Was he mean? Yes. Did he violate the law? No. Now, if he attacks her physically, punches her, beats her up, criminally confines her, well, now he's got a problem with the law. But we already took that category out. I think that counselees, see, even you're struggling with what is the value of it being called abuse. I think counselees, as a general rule, think and believe, and it's probably because to some degree we treat this way when we have physical violence of various kinds. When we have abuse, we move the counseling into a different category. It's not normal anymore. It's we have to deal with the violence. And until we deal with the violence, there isn't anything else to deal with. So we're talking about safety for one, and we're talking about dealing with violence for the other. So anytime we can categorize, or anytime a counselee can say, this is abuse, that means you need to treat me with that plan. My safety is first, and dealing with their violence is first. Nothing else matters. Well, that's a pretty heavy load.